Normally, we broadcast live from the announcer stand, but tonight with the Dierks Bentley concert, the concert makes so much noise that it's like trying to broadcast live from like the front row of the thing, and it just sounds so. We're actually at the studio tonight. What a fantastic day here at Oshkosh. I mean, I got a little bit of sunburn, but not too bad. They talked about a little bit of rain this afternoon as a possibility, and for an opening day, this was just about perfect. Now, you've been doing Oshkosh for quite a few years.
14 years.
14?
Without missing.
Okay. That's pretty good. Now, not this past April, but the year before, you did some records with a different legacy. Let's talk a little bit about that. You were that Mojave Experimenter Fly-In, which is a really cool event that a lot of people haven't heard of. Let's talk a little bit about that, because it's kind of like the best description I've heard is like all of the one percenters in the home built world got together, and you know, you were there, Lee Beal was there, Jeff Lang was there. There was all kinds of really, you know, modified and performance airplanes, and you guys set a bunch of world records while you're at it too.
Oh yeah, that event, I think you're going to see that explode in the near future. Every year it's getting bigger, more attention, and really it's a great event for aviators or experimenters and kind of going out on the edge and trying new things, and being able to go out and run head to head with some of the aviation's great. The records go back since the beginning of flight, and they assist you with the process. And I've set some world records prior to this event coming out, and it was a lot of paperwork and hassle and timing and scheduling with the FAA. And this event is a air show fly-in, and they help you if you want to break a record, and they get the FAA there, they get the documentation, they help you get it all ready. And everyone shows up and watches everybody else go after different records. It's an absolute blast and a great venue to experience the innovations that are coming out in aviation.
Now, the airplane that you flew that record in was not Turbulence. It was your previous Legacy. And that had a big engine in it as well, didn't it?
Yeah, so that Legacy was a Lycoming 720 engine that I put a big piston kit on and made it 780 cubic inches, and then built a supercharger system for it. So it was a supercharged 780 cubic inch Lance Air Legacy.
Wow. And then you did two records?
Yeah, I did two records, and winds were really, really bad, and the turbulence that day was awful, horrible heat and bumps. It was bad conditions, and so I decided to loop both records in the same pass, and they allow you to do that. It's a closed course record, so it's out and back type record. And I set a 1,000 kilometer and a 2,000 kilometer record. And by pairing them up, you kind of lose a little speed, because you actually make two 1,000 kilometer records back to back. And that the second turn you've now created for your 2,000 kilometer, it costs you a little bit of time, but it allowed me to do both records at one time. That was a lot of fun.
Well, that's kind of cool. And the records that you broke were from, I think Dick had set them, but in Bert Rutan's Catbird.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. So I don't remember which one of them, or if it was both of them, but I know one of them was in the Catbird. And so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it's not like a record that was, you know, it was a pretty substantial historical record, I mean, from an airplane that holds a number of world records. In fact, Zach went out and broke the 5,000 kilometer record
the same day he went off to do 5,000 kilometers. I went up to set the 1,000 2,000 kilometer record, and it's a really interesting record, and it's why it's been there a long time. The challenge is people, you know, the speed I threw up at that record was 318 miles an hour, and I had a 56 knot direct crosswind, which was a horrible event. I'd love a tailwind headwind, but it was a significant direct crosswind. But I ended up with a 318 mile an hour, 2,000 kilometer time. Now, what makes that challenging is you don't have the fuel to do that at a race configuration. So it's really about trying to manage. You need a lot of horsepower and a lot of fuel to be able to stay up that long. So even if you're flying a Legacy that's capable of 350 or 375 miles an hour, you only can pack enough fuel to do it and stay within the your weight limit of your aircraft and category. So that makes it a fun, challenging event. So that was really rewarding to pull that off.
How long did it take you to plan that record attempt, the flight? You don't just get in the airplane and do that. There's obviously some calculations and
I spent a couple weeks kind of really looking into it. And because that particular Legacy wasn't like the one before it, was twin-turboed. Twin turbos are really effective at all altitudes. This Legacy was set up specifically to go after that record. And so I was able to use a supercharger for that, because you can dial a pulley to a specific altitude and a specific fuel flow. And a supercharger may not be a great package to do for all-around flying, but it was it's a lot lighter package that allowed me to carry more fuel. And I was able to set a pulley for one specific altitude, and I had to hope that the winds would work at that altitude, kind of optimize it. And it worked out well, and I ended up with almost an hour of fuel on board, which I really thought I'd be at 30-minute mark. And so it turned out well, and the numbers worked, and I was really, really honored to get it.
That's pretty exciting. So I didn't know that you could customize the supercharger more so than a turbo. You've got...
Well, it actually it's not more so than a turbo. So the twin turbos are automatic, and you're just really watching the rev limiter, or you know, there's a certain RPM that a turbo can handle before you rip them apart, and so you got to really do a lot of math on that. And as long as you don't overrun those turbo RPMs, they're actually way better than a supercharger. And so I had a lot of people online, and I never even responded. I was too busy working. They debated back and forth supercharger and turbo, and it was fun to read it. And it's just fun to hear, you know, minds debate things like that. And they both have very specific qualities. I think overall I am a fan of turbos, but with a 780 cubic inch motor on the front of a Legacy and the weight that puts out, I could not get my center of gravity limits to handle twin turbo system and feel comfortable that I had a stable platform at those speeds. So that's what forced me into a supercharger specifically for that record. And then when I was done with the record, I pulled it off. It was built to do that, built to set it, and then put it away.
Okay. So now you've gone from like turbocharged, supercharger into the turbines. It's kind of a natural progression. In a lot of ways, the PT6 is a much, much simpler system-wide, you know, engine than the previous two that you've worked with.
Oh my goodness! I tell you what, I feel like I cheated building this airplane. When you do a supercharged 780, it is absolutely weeks of tuning and dialing and redoing carbon plenums and inlets and outlets and oil cooler sizing and how you're venting them. And then if you're venting them wrong, you're losing all kinds of parasitic load because you got too much cooling, not enough cooling, and this cylinder doesn't work or that doesn't work. And when you start to pack 780 cubic inches in a cowling like that, it's a challenge. And so I had the opposite effect. I put a PT6 in and turned it on, and I went through my entire test phase of flying of that airplane without anything to deal with, nothing. You start it and you fly and it goes. And if you don't mind the fuel burn, it is the way to go.
And now, that was a design challenge that you had, because the standard Legacy doesn't hold enough fuel that, you know, you could take it around the patch a couple times and that'd be about it. So where do you have the fuel in turbulence?
Yeah, that was one of the bigger challenges, was the engineering on the fuel system. If you were to look at it, I've had a lot of people come out and they see the fuel stamp on one side of the plane says 48 gallons. And they're like, man, you could probably only stay in the plane for an hour. Well, if you look around all the sides, you'll see it has a total of 160 gallons on board. And I did that by making the wings instead of removable. They're solid spars from tip to tip, and it has a rear spar that's also now reinforced solid from tip to tip. And so I have fuel that goes from one tip to the other tip right through the plane, including an aft tank. And I have now on board 160 gallons, and I can go at 25,000 feet. It burns 27 gallons an hour. So I have almost 6 hours of fuel and 1,800 nautical miles of range, which I'm really happy with.
That's pretty impressive. And so 1,800 miles, what kind of speeds are you getting at Is that like an economy cruise?
That's just at actually max power at 25,000 feet is going to be 27.7 gallons an hour at that altitude. So at that altitude, you lose over half your horsepower by the time you get to 28,000 feet on most turbines. So you're pushing about 325 horsepower, and you'll be doing approximately 330, 340 miles an hour on 27 gallons an hour, wide open.
Wow, that's actually fairly impressive.
It works out to be about 12.5 miles per gallon. So if you compare that to a Cirrus, which depending if you're running Rich or Lena Peak, is anywhere from 13 to 16, depending on how you fly it and what altitude, of course, and turbo or not, but it's a good rule of thumb. I'm not that far off. And if fuel stays the way it was recently at a dollar less a gallon, because I actually really worry about that for Jet A, I flew to Oshkosh for the same dollar as a friend of mine brought a Cirrus out.
Really?
Yeah.
That and you got here a lot quicker. Yeah.
A little bit faster, yeah.
And it's more fun than driving out here.
Well, that's about to happen. Today I'm jumping in a friend's RV. I'm leaving the plane here, and we're flying halfway back to Utah. My wife's been kind enough to get in a big old motorhome and drive it halfway across the country, and I'm gonna go halfway back in an RV, get out, get in a motorhome, and drive straight back out here, so I'll be here tomorrow.
Well, that's a project.
I have something to do tonight.
Yeah, exactly. I would say so. So now, you got all that fuel in the airplane. Is there actually room for baggage behind the seats or anything? Or
oh yeah, I've got tons of. I still have the majority of my baggage compartment. It's not quite as deep as it used to be, but as far as height, but the depth to the back bulkhead is just the exact same size. So yeah, you can fit 2-3 good sized bags and gear, and so I still got quite a bit of room. It's a very usable, extremely easy, predictable plane to fly. It's really stable. Really straight. It turned out really good.
Well, that's kind of cool. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about how this airplane compares to a stock airplane in terms of handling qualities and performance, because you and I have both flown, you know, a lot of experience in piston and turbine airplanes both, and most people are surprised to find out that the turbine airplanes are easier to fly than the piston ones. So we'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to the Traffic Jam on EAA Radio.